Accession number 14585, reel 4.
Mr. Slaughter, reel 4.
On arrival at base, the Japanese went to a prisoner of war camp. The Indonesian sailors joined the Merchant Marine, and we got a new command. And Fintje left for a hospital in Brisbane, I believe. Well, then we were in Fremantle. We had a quite good time over there. I know when we were walking on the road and a car made noise with a klaxon, then we got a shock. Because we still were very in routine. On the third patrol, it was routine for the 19 to lay a minefield in some shipping lane first and been proceeded on patrol. The required depth setting on the mines had all been done before loading. So it was just a matter of dropping the mines hydraulically at exact time intervals at a steady speed. As this was done submerged, each mine required compensating its negative buoyancy of 250 kilograms, which filled a special mine tank of 10 tons when the last mine left its bin. Before continuing, there are 2 points to be clarified as they are relevant to the story. The 19 had a pair of training torpedo tubes which were situated outside the pressure hull below the casing just forward of the 88mm gun. These tubes could be swung over a large arc. This arrangement, I believe, is very popular with the French. Training, operating and firing mechanisms were all done from the forward battery compartment. The Christmas tree, we call it, filled a sizable hole in the pressure hull. The cooling installation situated in the engine room used CO2 in the system. It was a design that had long been recognized as a hazard, but was retained for its efficiency. The condenser bundle was situated outside the pressure hull, below the casing just aft of the conning tower, whilst the evaporator was under the floor plates in the engine room. This arrangement, though not ideal, was thought to represent an acceptable risk, the reasoning being that prior to an attack all CO2 could be emptied from the system inboard into the condenser and kept there by closing the hull isolating valves. Any damage done with depth charges would just release the CO2 into the sea. This was a routine and had proven satisfactory. We had laid our minefield on the 3rd of January 1945 near Bavian Island in the Java Sea and started our patrol when on the 9th of January 1945 a merchantman escorted by a destroyer was sighted hugging the south coast of Borneo. We closed up for depth charge attack and a salvo of 4 torpedoes hit the ship, later identified as the armored merchant ship Shinko Maru 1. We sank the Maru 1 on the south coast of Borneo, and it was protected by a Japanese destroyer. But the main trouble was at that moment, when we sank the ship, he was just hauled under the coast of the south coast of Borneo. The depth at the moment when we got him in sight was about 25 meters. But when he changed his course, the captain was going all nearer the coast. And when he did his attack, and we hear the hits of the torpedo, automatically we go with a helling of 9 degrees, and it was 16 meters, and we lay on the sea bottom. But other words, we finished our attack, was on the sea bottom as well. And we got a big attack of depth charges from that destroyer. And he made a lot of damage. Also the training tubes between the pressure hull and the training tube, we had a lot of water in the compartment. We had a lot of trouble with the CO gas. We got double valves that just came off of the sitting, you know. We get water in the engine room, we got also in the back torpedo room. All the bulbs were broken down, no light of anything like that. So we were in a big damaged mess and just laying on the seabed. And sometimes you just hear them. You know, you hear the propellers, the noise is getting harder, harder, and harder, and dropping depth charge, bing, boom, boom, and you just hear them on top of you. You have to keep quiet and you have to behave yourself. But we have to wait. And what can we do? Nothing at the moment. And we never have a bearing. Only the noise we can hear, that was just from our own ears and not from either a phone or Vesdek. So then we ordered the men from the stern room and the engine room to come out and lock everything. That will say the lakes that through the water came in, that put up the pressure as well. And then we put on the oxygen, and everybody just lay down. Wait and see how long it will take. Till after a couple hours, we put on the breathing sets, and the captain was up in the gunning tower to keep all right. And we never hear anything, so he ordered to go on service. Suppose when we go on service, we blow the main tank 3. And when you be blowing that, the submarine came on service. But no, he didn't came on service. That will say we had a lot of water in the engine room and in the stern room. So then we blow tank 4. When we blow tank 4, all right, he came. The captain opened the bulkhead. He just look, you see a lot of hamper coming out of the boat, overpressing and things like that. Submerged again. Close it on the bottom. Tip charges again. How long will that take? We don't know. We put on the breathing set first. Somebody fainted already. No oxygen. So the skipper, he told the captain, he said, well, we have to do something. We have to go out. Because you don't have enough oxygen. We got the oxygen apparatus and everything at all. Okay. He asked me if the gun was ready for firing. He said, well, okay, have it ready before we got the dip chargers. So I don't know what happened on top. Charlie, cigarette books, put it in the back, and the back up in the gunning tower. Okay. But now, to get that door open from the engine room, with a lot of pressure on the bulkhead, and have to open in the direction of the engine room. That was very difficult. So he found a small tap. He opened it and then blow out the air so we get constant pressure. And with 2 men, he can open the engine room. The water was staying till on the plates. And then open up the bulkhead to the stern room. Also, water was very high, but not that high that it touched the electric engine, the dynamo. So they made an inspection about the engine room, what he can do. Peters, he got a breathing set, but he had to go to a narrow point to go behind the engine. He put it off, he fainted. We have to get him out. Take a couple minutes and he was all right again, so he tried again, but then met breathing set. The second engineer, he was inspecting the diesel, and Piet Kleinschmidt, he was going down below, inspecting the fuse box from the old pumps and that. He put in new fuses. So the captain say, okay, here we go. We try. And we're blowing again. The main tank 3. Blowing again. Main tank 4 to get them on service. About 15 degrees. He came on service. He opened the bulkhead. And Bosma, the second engineer, he pressed the button. Because he was started by air pressure. So the engine, he start. And we were happy to hear that. And then he put the handles for speed, put them to him. And when he got them on full speed, he fainted as well. But now we got fresh air. The first thing that he did, that was to inspect all the valves, to put on the lens pump, to get the water out. But in the water was also oil, since there must be an oil mark also on service. At full speed, carrying on for 1 hour, you know, and the Japanese didn't recognize us. So we were lucky, quite lucky. And then we go to the seabed again, about 50, 60 miles off the place. I submit, later on, be heard than the Rose of Tokyo. He must have broadcasted that the O-19 was sunk and that in that place. So the staff in Australia. First, the position was correct. Second point, who did you know that there was O-19? Because two Japanese ships were sunk on the mines we just laid 4 days before. And they know there was only one submarine mine layer in the Pacific. So she was all right. So everybody thought, okay, they had it. But when we lay on the sea bottom, the machinist and the monteurs all working hard to get the boat in a reasonable state to sail on service and also to go sail submerged. So when the day was finished, we came on service and he told me that the captain had sent a telegram to the staff in Australia, and he put in the telegram all the accidents we got, because we couldn't do many things. They were broke, the torpedo tubes, well, we have to put on special clamps. The engine room was quite alright, but when we were underwater, it was funny, and we have to handle the dive rods, it was just like a dolphin underwater. We couldn't understand. When the diesel was running, we had a lot of vibration, so they made one with so many tours and the other with so many tours. We find out that reasonable we could use, you know, for sailing on service. And the Americans say, well, okay, we sent submarines for surviving and sink the submarine. The captain wouldn't. He didn't do it. So we carrying on, but we didn't go through Strait Lombok, and we kept quiet. And then we go around Timor. That is the most western island you can get.
Yes, I know.
You see? And then we came in Darwin, and he asked for a diver to look on it. The other planes on the stern were gone. So we have always kept them underwater, only with the four front hydroplanes. And the divers say, your propellers just look like cabbage. So we were quite lucky that we came in Darwin. And we made a big party in Darwin. Because oration on a submarine is not as by the British Navy an oorlam, but on the submarines you should drink every day 1/10 of a liter red wine. That is to keep your blood clean and things like that. So every evening, we got mocks, you know, and everybody should drink wine. Nearly nobody drink wine. So when we came in Darwin, we took the rest of the wine, put it in a big pan, put it in. We got on every patrol 10 tins of fruit. Special when one of the crew got ill, they can use that fruit for them. We put it in. And the torpedo man, who clean always the periscopes, he do it with alcohol. Clean the periscope. We put it in. We boil it and we drink it. So we had a big party in Port Darwin. That was a lovely port over there. They had one pub in Port Darwin. And you know what was put on the pub? When the first bomb is dropped, this pub will close. And the first bomb was dropped on the pub. Yeah, that was Port Darwin. And from there we go back to Fremantle, get repaired. We thought we will go home to Europe. No. The America repaired the ship again. And he fixed it that we can start our fourth patrol. On the fourth patrol, we got again the mines and the bunch starboard and a port side. We go to Strait Lombok. We have to go to Manila. But after all, I heard when we came in Manila, we would be ordered to go to Tokyo Bay to lay the mines. But on that point, we never came over there. Never forget that the submarine always, if you go on patrol, this date you have to be in this square, that date you have to be in that square, and that date you have to be in that square. Why? Because the recognition planes, before they go up in there, they have a briefing. And they be told you can expect an Allied submarine in that area. Or you can expect in that area. Because there is no time for a submarine and a plane to change a signal. Because if he starts saying we go submerged, or we start saying we never do it, because you always miss the submarine when you do like a service ship, you know, change signals. So that is what the planes for orders got. So when you go to Manila, the captain, he know, today you have to be in here, tomorrow you have to be there. And now of the South China Sea, there is very less know-how about streams and things like that. So at an evening, it was about 9 o'clock, the captain came on the bridge and told the officer of the watch, change your course now from 90 degrees till 75, more round the north. Because we never have a chance for a good navigation, because it was always cloudy, heavy rains, no sun, no stars. Thus it was just gas. And in the morning, about 5:30, on the side, or front, shitting water, just like you usually have on the beach and things like that, and the sun was shining. And then at a speed from about 17, 18 miles up the river, a special high flood, and the river is full up on the water, so up the river, the stern, there's a lot of water, and he was staying like that. So when we were on the rift, we had about an angle from about 15 degrees. And don't forget, met the mines, the bunds were open down below. And the rift was sticking in the bunds. So we fired the bow torpedoes. We fired the gun. We had the engine full speed, backward. And the boat did not move. He was staying. So we could do nothing about it. So, don't forget that as well Borneo, as friend of Indochina, called now Vietnam, was still occupied by the Japanese.
This is July 1945.
Yeah, I think the 7th. Anyway, the commander, he sent out a telegram in what position we are. Then the American submarine Kort was ordered to give us assistance. And the day after, we saw the American submarine coming on the other side of the Lead Rift. And Charlie, the signalman, he gave him a sign. Change your course to the north, if he was going on the rift as well. So less know how was there about the south. So he goes around the rift. He came very near us. Got a Zodiac. Came on board. See the situation. And we take the chain of the anchor from the bow. Put it round the conning tower. And the end of the chain was brought over to the submarine cot. So the cot full speed, and the O-19 full speed backward, and we couldn't move a millimeter, the O-19. So then, they made the decision to destroy the submarine and escape the crew. All right. We always had in wartime demolition ready. Front tubes, by the radio transmission, and in the stern, be the clutch from the diesel engine. So the American came and saw it. You just have to put in the ignitus, but you want to put on a clock. Yeah? We always use fuse 10 centimeters a second so you can put on the time. So you put on a clock. We still had two torpedoes and we still had the mines on board. Well, after trying very hard and take over the secret books and some radar or IFF instruments, we're all going to the cot. The crew was going over to the cot with the Zodiacs and with Orion Yol. And then at last, I have put on the time clock. I put them on and the captain, and we left the ship and going to the cot. The cot was moving away about 2,500 meters. And then the demolition ignition was working. Big blow, big smoke, torpedoes, mines, I don't know. It was very, very much, you know, what you saw in the air. Okay, but the submarine still staying like that. So then they start firing with the gun, the American. The shells, you know, all round, ricochets. Then he put in two torpedoes, because the stern was in deep water. He put in two torpedoes, the American. Still staying, 290. So we were on board of the submarine Cod. We brought over to Manila. Then we were going to a small island, Manus. And then we go by Dakota airplane to Australia. And we landed with a Dakota plane in Sydney. And from Sydney, the crew goes to Melbourne. And the whole crew was going to be trained from Melbourne to Perth, Fremantle, there was a submarine base, and I have to stay in Melbourne because I have to take the responsibility for the arms who were in Melbourne. I was not happy with the bloody job, but okay, the captain say, right, as soon as I be in Perth, I try to do my best that you come back to Perth. Says, all right, doesn't promise. Well, I'd be staying there for about 2 months, and in that time the war was finished on August. And then I was transferred to Perth, back again. But I hear the story of the boys who was in the train from Melbourne to Perth. That took 4 or 5 days. And they just were sitting in the cabin just like herring in a tin, you know. I said, well, I don't like the bloody train. So I was going to the Australian Air Force field, and I asked when the captain say, is there no possibility for a lift to Perth? Yeah, well, Dutchie, for you always. And you'll be here at 2 o'clock on Friday. And you get a lift because you've got a plane. You have to go to Adelaide and to Perth. So I was in the plane. And I came in on Friday. And I report on the base on Wednesday. I gave myself a holiday for 4 days. And then you have to go to the O-23. And the O-23 was a submarine just came from England. Didn't have any action on the way to Fremantle, and the war was finished. But the PO gunner, I don't know what happened. They told me he had been in a fight in Port Said and was in the hospital, so I took over the job on the O-23. From the O-23, we were going to the Far East, and from Lord Mountbatten, we didn't get permission to go into Priok. Not before the 1st October. We got a marine brigade that was trained during the war in America. They was in Malaya. They didn't get permission to go to Indonesia. So we have to wait. And on the October the 1st, we were allowed to go in the harbor from Priok. There was the Dutch ship Heemskerk. There was the Dutch ship Tromp just came in on the 1st of October. And we came in met the Tiger High in that submarine and the O-23. The Dutch ship was a combination communication with the camps where the women and kids were internet by the Japanese. And there was a lot of trouble because the Japanese have given a lot of arms to what we call the Clappers Sukarno. And these Clappers, they made a lot of trouble to the women and kids in the camps. So we have to go on shore, six men of the Tiger High, six men of the O-20, sorry, with a Japanese truck, and we have to go to a camp that was in Buitenzorg, and the name of the camp was Beatrix, and there were a lot of women and children and men in that camp. And that camp was midden, in the middle, about 300 yards from the main road, and all around was Aleng Aleng, that's high grass. What the hell? What are you going to do now? So we have to repair, because we had a little commander training all before. I put a box of hand grenades on top of the cabin. Two men there, in the back. And the officer was a Dutchman, but he had Chinese parents. Dus die know the language very well and everything about it. So we go on the way. We had a lot of troubles on the road, that the car couldn't go any farther.
What kind of trouble?
Now, with the Clappers. The opposition from Sukarno.
Shooting, you mean?
No, they had spears, bamboos and things like that. But not shooting on the way we were going over there. But we had troubles, we couldn't farther with the car, you know, because there were trees and everything, you put it on the road.
Were they attacking you?
No, they stopped us, and then they started attacking with bamboo spears and things like that. So we put up some hand grenades, and then we got beat, and we cleared the road. And then we came in Buitenzorg, on the camp. And we took the swords of the Japanese, and they were put up in a camp, and we take over the duty in Buitenzorg. Well, the first day, everything was quite all right. And when we saw the camp over there, children, you know, very poor, hungry and things like that. And the food that was brought up for us, well, I couldn't eat the food because I got left-hand side and we child on the right-hand side and we child. So I just food them. I couldn't take food because if you see the wee kids hungry, nearly starving. And we had made our orders. We had checked the telephone at the headquarters that was in the Harmony Society in Jakarta. And the order was, we don't give alarm, only we start firing straight away, double men and things like that on duty. That was in the evening about 9 o'clock. We heard that there were about 400 men armed with the Japanese. That's very bad. We only went with 12 men.
Were these Clappers?
Yeah, the Clappers. And if you take the camp, then all the grass around there, and over there was a small house. And the schildwacht, he saw shadows, people going in that house with arms. So he made alarm. What can we do? The Chinese officer, the Dutch officer, asked for help on the headquarters, Harmony. So he was phoned because he speaks very good Malaya. Henk Wakker, he lives in Scotland, and I, we were going